Chapter 28 Cascada. Matwick leaned forward in his box in the Peacock Theatre, his arm on the railing, his eyes drinking in the spectacle, his ears catching every word.
So this is what pity feels like?
What? Are these real tears on my cheeks? It provides a certain ennobling glow.
Plays gave Matwick a rare taste of the emotional palette that people around him claimed to experience. Watching from his special Regent's box, Matwick not only recognised the character's sentiments, he came close to actually experiencing them. He attended most productions several times, finding that familiarity with the story enhanced rather than detracted from his delight. This was the third time he had seen The Maiden's Plight. Its dramatic action stirred him. He responded especially to the middle of Act Two, when the mother fainted from bad news.
Poor soul, taxed beyond what she could bear.
And the end of Act Three, when the maiden's brother swore to avenge her,
yes, I would do that too.
And the climax, when the woebegone heroine had sunk to her knees and rent her dress in anguish,
oh, the picture of innocence persecuted.
She should rip off that dress, it's so out of fashion, commented Lady Dinista.
Shut up!
Matwick hissed at her, annoyed that she had interrupted his trance. He turned back to the stage where the dashing hero, so what if his belly hung low? He had a great voice that throbbed with feeling, now vowed to give up his throne for her.
Is this selflessness? Does love actually inspire selflessness?
Matwick had become a devotee of the theatre. Because Cascada was a magnet for all the artists in the land, he'd heard concerts by court musicians and watched performances by the royal dancers. But it was the plays at the Aqueduct and the Peacock that had caught his fancy, with their fencing, twirling silks, tension-filled stories, rousing music, and firecrackers set off at the finale. For the space of a few hours, his heart beat faster with concern and suspense. Better still, he knew that all the other spectators shared his feelings. At the theatre, he felt most fully alive and almost normal. Matwick always found it deflating to leave the magic of the theatre and return to real life. Especially tonight, when he was obliged to host a late-night supper party. His new chambellan pulled it off quite well, but then it wasn't a grand event. Merely a token engagement celebration for Lady Dinista and Lord Retzel's second son. Matwick rejoiced in getting Dinista, the grasping schemer, out of Cascada. The Retzel family should be able to afford to keep her in the height of fashion. Due to the Queen's prolonged absence, the custom that stewards served no more than one 10-year term had naturally been suspended. In the years Cressa had been gone, Matwick had consolidated his hold over the Western duchies, the army and the court. As Lord Regent and Lord Steward, he dominated Weirendale. Last night's banquet had been part of his ongoing campaign to keep the nobles from getting restless. They appreciated that he had put down the parity party troublemakers with their demands for suffrage, property rights, religious freedom and the like. Matwick recognised the irony of himself, born a commoner, becoming the champion of the aristocracy, but he decided that his birth had been an accident. Surely his mind, his skills promoted him to the natural nobility. Surely his rare intelligence and capabilities entitled him to rule. He was the only one competent to do so. However, much as he tried to censor the news, the continual successes of the Allied fleet against the Pellish made some of the gentry wish they were winning these laurels, or at least had them pining to gain the favour of this dashing and heroic queen. Amongst the dukes and lords, Matwick carefully employed just a little sarcasm or raised an eyebrow, undercutting her accomplishments, reminding them of the scandal with Belcazar, all the while exuding complete confidence that this monarch would never be returning to reclaim her throne. Keeping his influence amongst the rich aristocrats required constant whining, soothing, flattery, financial inducements, and occasionally a veiled or even naked threat. Matwick enjoyed all of this because he felt himself at the height of his powers. He would look about the supper table at all the people of such noble lineage. Their insecurities, ambition, or greed blazed nakedly to a watcher as skilled as he. He could play them like the keys of a harpsichord. Amongst the little people, Matwick also performed a tricky balancing act. Publicly, he proclaimed himself to be Queen Cressa's most ardent admirer and her most devoted servant. An early decision designed to demonstrate this loyalty had been to promote Lady Fania, one of the Queen's hand-selected ladies-in-waiting, her trusted advisor and friend, to the Circle Council to take the place of Belcazar, who had left because of a regrettable illness in his family. Fania's elevation had turned out to be more than a symbolic gesture. It was she who had the inspiration of forging communiques to the Lord Regent in Queen Cressa's name, communiques that urged the people to obey the Regent in all matters. But while Matwick tried to persuade the people of the legitimacy of his rule, he also inexorably squashed the least hint of discontent with his administration. A new proclamation made it a crime to disparage the Lord Regent. People who couldn't hold their tongues got 10 lashes or a day in the stocks. This morning, Matwick studied the paper in front of him. The Duke of Crenivale reported so disciplining 27 scoundrels. Matwick compared the reports from other duchies, realising that the Duke of Maritima had not sent one in.
Is trouble brewing in Maritima? The last time I saw the Duke and Duchess, they pestered me about the Princella. But then everyone pesters me about her.
If she isn't in Lothlorien, where is she?
Behind this perpetual question lies an insinuation. You're not holding her captive, are you?
A knock on the door interrupted Matwick's headache.
Lord Regent, we have the men you seek,
announced Heathclaw. When 3 of the Queen's Shield, escorting 4 horses, returned to Cascada, they tried to slip back on the sly. Fortunately, Matwick's spies reported their arrival immediately. Since the horses returned to the royal stables, he would have found out eventually, though he had doubts about the loyalty of all the stable hands. Matwick came forward to greet his guests, noticing that their uniforms were faded and salt-stained, and their skin had taken on even darker shades of brown. Heathclaw made introductions, the one with a white and red slash across his lips and chin and knocked-out front teeth was named Pontol. The man with his arm in a sling was Branwise, and the oldest, the man who must have been Matwick's age or more, who looked hollowed out by illness but had a cunning look in his eyes, was their leader, Sergeant Yaneth.
Would you care for wine, rum or mead? The castle cellars are at the disposal of the men in blue. No, thank you, my lord, answered Yaneth, standing straight in the middle of his office, a man on each side. Come, come, men, you are off duty, Matwick scoffed. We must celebrate your return. A bit early in the day for us, my lord. To each his own,
said Matwick, pouring himself a small glass of wine from the decanter on his table.
Your health and prosperity,
he said, downing his glass and hoping it would alleviate his headache.
Shields declining to drink? They must be watching their tongues. When did you last see our noble queen? Close to 3 moons ago. The winds did not favour us,
answered Sergeant Yaneth. Apparently he was to be the spokesperson.
Where was this? In Pelagos.
No surprise. Matwick's spies had kept him informed that Pelagos was the base of Cressa's operations. They had also informed him that repeated attempts to penetrate the guest house she stayed in had needed to be called off.
Was she healthy? Very hale, Lord Regent. Ah, oh, how it gladdens my heart to hear this. And she is well supported. How many ships now follow her banner? Don't know exactly, Lord Regent. Dozens. With shields, we're not privy to the Navy's discussions or ledgers. Of course, of course. But we heard that the Rawthers and the Lawthers have joined the fray and that our heroic Cressa wins great victories. I guess,
said Yaneth shortly.
You know, men, it was the Circle Council that sent the rest of the Weir fleet to join the fray. We support the Queen wholeheartedly. Nightly we entreat Nargis for her victory.
Yaneth said nothing.
How goes the fight against the Pelish? Decidedly tough combatants, I hear. Aye, my lord, plenty of Weir and allied blood to testify to that. You've lost friends and companions,
said Matwick, trying sympathy.
You've suffered, I see. Oh, we're all right,
said Yaneth.
Such modesty! Shall I ring for palace healers to examine you? Is there anything you need? Nothing is too good for our fighting men. Thank you, my lord. We'll do well enough. How does the Princella fare? Is she affrighted, the precious thing? The Princella, sir?
Echoed Yaneth.
Yes, the Princella. Has your illness affected your hearing? I hear well enough, Lord Regent, but we haven't seen the Princella since we left the palace. I guess 3 years ago. Pray the waters she be thriving. Do you expect me to believe that in all this time, the Queen has not visited with her only daughter? Come, come. Everyone knows she dotes on the lass, as we all do. Lord Regent, our job has been to protect Her Majesty. We have seen nothing of the Princella.
Matwick placed his hands together in a prayer-like position and smiled broadly.
I was testing you, men. We know the Princella is safely away from the fray, awaiting her mother's triumphant return, as are we all.
Yaneth said nothing. Pontol and Bramwise stared at him warily and shifted their weight.
Truculent. I won't tolerate it.
Why have you left your posts?
The men stirred at this sudden thrust, and Pontol folded his arms across his chest. Yaneth kept his cool.
Queen Cressa herself sent us back to Cascada, lord. She said she was tired of losing good men. She wants some of the shield to survive, and she wanted the horses to come home. So you say,
the regent tapped each matching finger together.
Did she send you back with written orders? No, sir. So I have only your word. You are not deserters.
Matwick lifted an eyebrow and let the word hang. The guards compressed their lips but did not respond.
What's this about horses?
A ship is no place for a fine animal, answered Pontol, gesturing with his hands. And there weren't no use on island skirmishes. Night Mist and Smoke, they'd be the best stock in Weirendale. Night Mist and Darius's mare Bucket, they should be bred. They are both still in their prime. His voice trailed off as Matwick stared him down. Matwick abruptly changed topic, hoping to catch the men off balance.
What letters has the Queen received? Lord Regent, such is hardly our bailiwick, responded Yaneth, glancing at his fellows. Bramwise's face had turned even darker. Yaneth continued with some heat in his voice. And if we did know, we wouldn't speak of it, not to you, nor anyone else. I much dislike your tone. You mistake me. My concern for the Queen, the Princella, and the realm makes me anxious.
Matwick tapped his fingers together while he considered the situation.
I could have them questioned professionally, but I doubt they know much, or Cressa would not have sent them back. This is a waste of my time. Very good, men. I welcome you back to your homeland. What are your plans for the future? We are sworn to the Queen. We will wait in attendance for her return.
Matwick allowed himself a short laugh.
Wait here? In the palace? I think not. With no queen in residence, your company in the palace would be neither appropriate nor appreciated. You will have to find yourselves other employment.
He enjoyed the look of shock Bramwise covered up slowly.
But let me congratulate you on your safe return,
Matwick called out for Heathclaw.
Lord Regent, he asked as he opened the door.
Reward each of these men with 2 golden catamounts for their fine service and see them out.
The 3 guards marched out, their backs stiff at being summarily ejected.
Matwick sent for Prisian.
What do you hear from your contacts?
I informed you, milord, the last time a bird arrived. The Pelish fight craftily but lose territory. The fleet has driven them out of more than half of their former sites. They can mount fewer raiding parties and their supplies dwindle.
Did you send more funds?
Yes, but by ship, not by bird. The thought of diamonds slipping off of leg bands into the sea appalls me. We are going to have to review the budget soon. Costs have escalated. If harvests ever come in scant, we'll be in real trouble.
Matwick waved this consideration away.
Have you increased the bounty?
I believe the bounty is sufficiently high now, my lord. On their own account, the Pelish would be delighted to be rid of the Queen and her consort, but they haven't had an opportunity, neither on land nor sea. That lure their anticipation. It may help them escape all our nets.
I would like to speak to Envoy Thumb, make arrangements.
Matwick dismissed Prisian.
Could it be that after all my efforts, Cressa will indeed defeat the Pelish and return home triumphant? I must not allow this to happen. And where is the Princella? Why has Jürgen's network failed to find her out?
I need to enlist Thumb's Magi in both causes, defeating the Armada and finding the girl.